And good afternoon, folks, and welcome to the Over the Fence show here on a quite a rainy but very pleasant kind of afternoon here in Whangaroa. And I hope you guys are doing all right. And today we're going to be bringing you the primary sector headlines, some weather, some gardening to do's, and then in a little while we're going to be talking to Craig Rollinson, award-winning business owner and farmer in Raglan here. And I'm a little disorganised, folks, to be honest, so let me just get a song teed up for you. What I'm going to play straight away is Radiohead's Packed Like a Tin of Sardines in a Crushed Can. Hope you enjoy this one. So there we are, folks. That was a Packed Like a Sardine in a Crushed Can by Radiohead there. And now it's time for headlines here on the Over the Fence Show. And New Zealand and Australia say they are aware of reports of Chinese media that meat exports from both countries are banned, but they have received no official notice from Beijing, and shipments have been clearing as normal. The Australian Financial Review paper said one Chinese media outlet had said that agriculture imports into China from New Zealand and Australia were to be suspended due to concerns about foot and mouth disease. And sticking with foot and mouth disease, the Ministry of Primary Industry says a task force is ready to act if foot and mouth is confirmed here. MPI has formulated a plan with other government agencies, industry partners and stakeholders. And if an outbreak was confirmed, a government-wide response would kick in to New Zealand. And New Zealand has access to a vaccine bank of the most common strains of foot and mouth. But as the vaccine needs to match the circulating strain, a preemptive vaccination was not effective, said MPI's Chief Veterinary Officer, Dr. Mary Van Andel. So, yeah, it's circulating around all right. Will it come over here? Yeah, maybe, maybe not. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if and when. Sika is working to export more avocados to Asia this season to minimise its reliance on the Australian markets. Company Chief Executive Michael Franks said Australia is our biggest market for avocados, but last year it had an oversupply, reducing prices for growers in Aotearoa. He adds the domestic season started about 3 weeks ago, and exports to Thailand, China, South Korea and Japan were just starting. And sticking with kiwifruit again, kiwifruit this season has been of a poorer quality than last year, and the rising input costs means Zespri suppliers can expect a lower return this season. Zespri Chief Executive Dan Matheson said fruit quality remained an ongoing and significant issue this season. Matheson added there were quality issues across other fruit categories over the globe this season, and our colleagues and competitors were also battling labour shortages, supply chain congestion and inflationary pressures. Indicators were that conventional fruit returns would be at the bottom or possibly below the ranges published in June, but organic fruit quality was comparable to last season and growers can expect better returns. Is there something in that, folks? Maybe. And a New Zealand wool product will be on board a NASA spacecraft and making its way to the moon later this month. NASA will launch an Orion spacecraft on an unmanned test flight at the end of August, ahead of a scheduled manned mission. On board will be New Zealand's company's Lanaco's filters, made from New Zealand sheep wool, which Lanaco founder Nick Davenport said significantly increase astronauts' chances of survival in the event of a fire on board the capsule. He added that basically the same product that is used in face masks for people in New Zealand is the same one that's going to be on the spacecraft, and that it showed investment in wool science could produce more than just socks. So there we are. There's a few of the headlines here for you folks today. And now I'm going to play for you, because Craig Rawlinson, our guest in the studio, I know he likes this one, and I like this one too. This is Can't Find My Way Home by Bonnie Raitt. Hope you enjoy it.
This is Stevie Winwood's song.
Yes, and we will, Craig, we will. Don't want to mention it at all.
Standing change. You are the reason I've been waiting all these years. Somebody holds a key. Well, I'm near the end and I just ain't got the time. And I'm wasted and I can't find my way home. Ooh, and I can't find my way home. Ooh.
Bonnie Raitt there doing a cover of Steve Winwood's Can't Find My Way Home, which I think originally appeared on a Blind Faith album in the late 60s maybe. But anyway, it's weather time now here on the Over the Fence show. And a front feeds into the South Island today, bringing very heavy rain to the northwest corner, with dry conditions to the east of the South Island. And the North Island is under a northeasterly airflow with patchy rain or drizzle from about Napier north to the east of the island. And tomorrow, perhaps Friday morning, sees heavy rain headed into the North Island, into the upper and western parts. So probably into Whangaroa, probably. And the next couple of weeks, it looks kind of rainy for the west coast and the top of the South Island again. And in the western North Island around here, which is coming down from the tropics, so it's actually quite warm. So I think it's like 17, 18 degrees something today. So it's actually really good grass growing conditions, one would think. Could be an early spring flush. Anyways, where was I? This means there's going to be probably no snow for the ski fields for a little while, as most of the weather is coming from the north, and it's quite warm, like I just said. And it's for the Waikato today, it's mostly cloudy with patchy rain or drizzle. But the more persistent rain will spread down from Northland into the Waikato, perhaps tonight. So it's showery today, rainy tomorrow, showery again on Friday, rainy Saturday, and showery from Sunday into next week. And pretty windy and kind of blustery today until Saturday. Predominantly northeasterly winds ranging from 23 to 33 kilometres per hour, with the winds moving from more nor'westerly on Sunday and Monday, and then west-south-westerly on Tuesday into next week. So expect about 40-odd mils of rain tomorrow, they say, and daytime temperatures are rather warm, somewhere between 16 and 18 degrees Celsius pretty much all week, and nighttime temperatures will be between 11 and 16 degrees Celsius till Saturday, then 10 degrees from Sunday into next week. Humidity today is somewhere between 87 and 93%. And the sun rose this morning at 7:06 and will set at 5:46 p.m. And the length of visible light is 11 hours and 34 minutes. The actual day length is 10 hours and 40 minutes. And tomorrow will be 2 minutes and 5 seconds longer than today. Last week, just for a comparison, was like 1 minute and 58 seconds. So we've cracked the 2 minutes marks. And it certainly feels like the day is getting longer, you know, when you get up in the morning and such things. And the moon, ladies and gentlemen, is a waxing gibbous, somewhere between 73 and 77% illuminated. And it, yeah, the full moon that was just there, it was big and beautiful, wasn't it? It was the second super full moon of the year, and it was magnificent to view. And the new moon's coming up on the 27th of August, and the moon will rise at 10, or has risen, at 10:23 p.m. Oh, will rise, sorry, at 10:23 p.m. It will set at 9:30 tomorrow morning. All right, so there's kind of your weather. Now I'm going to play for you Sneaky Feelings, Pity's Sake, and I'll come back with some gardening to-dos after that. Sneaky Feelings there with Pity's Sake, Good Dunedin Band. Now it's time for gardening here on the Over the Fence show on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM and 89.0 on Free FM throughout the Waikato. Hope you're enjoying the show today. And if you're gardening by the moon, ladies and gentlemen, today and tomorrow is a good time to sow beetroot and Florence fennel in seed trays and shit the early season varieties of spuds like your Swift and your Rocket varieties. And for Friday is a good time to remove spent winter crops and use them for hot compost. You can also start to plant subtropicals around here in the Waikato and north, sort of like your citrus, avocados, tamarillos, feijoas and bananas, those sorts of things. And you're asking yourself, what else can I plant here in the Waikato this month? Well, these things: apples, asparagus, beetroot, blackberries, blueberries, bok choy, cabbage, calendula, cauliflower, coriander, cyclamen, feijoas, forget-me-nots, gladiolus, kale, leeks, lemons, lettuce, lily, limes, mandarins, mesclun, onions, oranges, parsley, parsnip, peas, peaches, pears, plums, radish, raspberries, rhubarb, rocket, roses, spinach, strawberries, and silver beet. So yes, plenty there to keep going. And that's the gardening to-dos for this week. And the next one I'm going to play it for three reasons. One is because I was having a chat to Tony, fellow DJ here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM on Sunday down at the pub. And he used to run a business in Brixton. And I've always been curious as to what the song, the origins of it were. And he said there was massive street riots and in Brixton in 1981 because of basically police brutality and such things. But his shop was unharmed because he was all right, some fellow was telling him. And secondly, because I was just talking to, again, at the Harbour View Hotel last night at quiz night, talking to Emma, who does the Best British Show on Friday night, which I'm looking forward to because she's going to do a punk special this Friday. And she'll probably play a song from this band. And third reason is because I like the song, and it's The Guns of Brixton by The Clash.
Gonna come with your hands on your head. Oh. Local news, Waikato District Council voted unanimously yesterday to begin the process of returning the Raglan Airfield to the original owners. Staff will now engage with the Office for Crown Relations and other agencies to facilitate the return of the Raglan Airfield land. Originally taken around World War II for defence purposes, the land was wrongly given to the council in 1969, sparking the Matakite or Aotearoa movement led by Eva Rickard in 1971. This led to the return of the golf course land in 1987, but the airfield remained in council hands. When the issue of fencing the airfield emerged at the March 31st Community Board meeting last year, it was decided that council staff should investigate how the land should be returned. Despite this, a community meeting was called a few weeks later and an occupation on the site a few months after that. As a result of yesterday's decision, staff will start discussions with the minister to request the vesting of the reserve be cancelled, but there's still lots of red tape to get through after this and legal confusion to work out. And Waikato District Council has reviewed its local alcohol policy and is proposing a number of changes, including that there be no more bottle shops opened in Raglan and other Waikato towns. There was considerable opposition in the community when it was first proposed that Thirsty Liquor be established on Bow Street, but regulations stymied attempts to prevent the business being approved. Now, the regulations have improved after that, but this is a further opportunity to beef them up. Submissions close on 11th of September at the council office. That is the regular news for Wednesday, 17th of August, 2022.
Hi Raglan, Wayne Super Values. Come in and check out our great specials with over 1,000 every week. If you are a gold card holder, every second Tuesday is for you. Present your card and receive an instant 5% discount on your purchases, including all existing specials. Our community cash grants are available to all local clubs and organisations. Our New Zealand Post and KiwiBank staff are here to help. We look forward to seeing you in store and being part of this great Raglan community.
Raglan Fuko exists thanks to the supportive community around us. Locals were our first customers.
To say thank you, we've created a $5,000 community fund for Whangaroa-based projects.
Maybe you need help kickstarting a community project.
Or extra funding to further the awesome mahi you're already doing.
Maybe you need money for trees.
Or hives for bees. Whatever it may be, we want to hear from you.
Head to raglanfuko.com and complete the online application form under our good project section.
Thanks for your support, Whangaroa.
Did you know that Raglan was one of the first towns in New Zealand to ban the single-use plastic bag?
Yes!
Now join our journey to a reusable Raglan and say...
See ya!
To all sorts of single-use...
Plastic water bottles...
Containers and cutlery...
Straws...
And coffee cups.
For all these things, we can choose to reuse instead.
Reusable Raglan, the Raglan way!
When in the West, listen to the best, Raglan Community Radio, 98.1.
And welcome back to the Over the Fence show here on 98.1 Raglan Community Radio and to our friends over on Free FM 89.0 going throughout the Waikato. Hope you fellas are having a great day. And now we're joined by today's guest, Craig Rowlandson, who... is a local farmer in the area and Nicola, his wife, and yes, an award-winning business owner. We're probably not going to talk about that today, but anyways, Craig, welcome to the show.
Oh, welcome, Craig. It's quite an honour to be asked to come and talk on your world-famous and Raglan radio show, talking about farming.
Oh, thanks, Craig. Yes.
No, that's fine.
Yes. And so, I guess, firstly, Craig, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up owning that beautiful block of land you have up there, Turtle Road.
I was brought up on a dairy farm in Tauranga and swore that I'd never milk cows and ended up going to Lincoln College, because Lincoln was a college back when I was there. It was just the university, part of the University of Canterbury. Did a Bachelor of Commerce degree in valuation and farm management. And after finishing that, I worked in Te Kuiti for 2 years with the what was the Department of Māori Affairs, supervising and overseeing Māori Affairs farms in the King Country and doing valuations. And then after 2 years of that, I went dairy farming. Of all things.
Dairy farming?
Yeah.
Why, Trey?
Isn't. Well, back then it was one way to try and get a farm of your own and do your own thing. So
yeah,
that's why we went off and did it.
So we started as share milkers, you guys?
Yeah, so Nicola and I got married in 1986. I was just working on wages in Matamata. Then we went share milking in Okarori. Then we went share milking in Te Awamutu. Then, after the Edgecombe earthquake, we bought a farm down in Otamarakau, which is halfway between Te Puke and Wakatane. So we were down there for 3 years, then went to Otrahonga and converted a bull farm into dairying, which probably isn't the right thing to do now, everyone would say. And then we were there for 6 years and then moved to Raglan about 24 or 25 years ago, where we just grazed dairy heifers. So Nicola runs the farm.
Yes,
I'm supposed to be the maintenance person, but she tells everyone that I'd probably get the sack because I'm not that reliable.
Yes.
So that's kind of where we are.
I'd kind of forgotten about the Edgecombe earthquake. I mean, how much of a thing was it? And when was it again?
Must have been 19... It happened 85, 86, I think. So farm values down in kind of south of Te Puke, down through, across those plains, through Edgecombe and that, farm values dropped quite a bit. That time, the land, there was a lot of upheaval in the land. So, yeah, we bought a place up Otamarakau, and a couple of our neighbours had actually had farms down around Edgecombe during it. So, yeah, it was a big deal back then, actually.
Yeah, yep. No, I've kind of forgotten about that one. Yes.
Were you born then? Oh, yeah, you were.
What did you say, 81?
Mid-80s, Craig.
Mid-80s, yeah. No, I was a child in those days.
There we go.
Yes. Yep. Born 77, I was, of course, yes. And your chair's squeaking, Craig. Stop wriggling around.
Oh, okay. so that's a bit of background. Yeah, so it's, I mean, we came to Raglan in 99. Well, I bought the place in 97.
Yes.
Came here, and like everyone in town, we've seen the place change and, you know, more people around town. And I think, you know, New Zealand as a whole has become a more urbanised country than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. So, you know, attitudes towards farming have changed. And
I sure have.
Yeah, and rightly or wrongly, that's what we just have to accept, that there is a differing of opinion about how farmers should farm and what they should do.
I think, Craig, it's maybe that's a result of, you know, back in the days, everybody had like an uncle or grandparents or whatever, you know, on some kind of farm or whatever, but there's that disconnect these days. You know, and I know we've talked about it before, but I think it's actually, it's probably more prominent now than it's ever been, how some people just have no idea, you know, what farming is or have never been on a farm and such things.
Yeah, and I think it's unfortunate too, Craig, that 80%, it's still a fact, you know, 80% or 75% of New Zealand's export earnings come from, well, how they're classed now is food and fibre. So that's agriculture and horticulture and wool. So like a household budget, you know, you need money coming in for the imports you're going to buy. And so when you're talking 80% of your export earnings, it is very, very important that we carry on and do what we do, and we do it very well. And, yeah, there can be improvements. I mean, you know, going back, I worked on some farms in South Island and Canterbury in the late 70s, early 80s. And they, you know, at that point, they've been pouring on DDT for Piranha and grass grub and everything. And I think what people need to sit back and think that we, you know, farmers and people in town and everyone else, we do things that at the time we think is the right thing to do, and we don't know what the consequences might be further down the track. So is it any different than people washing their car in town, detergent all going down the drain and ending up in the sea? You know, there's problems everywhere.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, and I guess it's an early adapter thing, right? So, like, I don't know, like, I think in time the use of, say, I want to say glyphosate, but Aaron always tells me to pronounce it a different way. How do you pronounce it?
Oh, I just talk about Roundup, I suppose, which is, you know, which has got glyphosate in it, Craig.
Yes, I see glyphosate as well. Yeah, good. Yeah, Aaron always chased me about that. But yeah, I mean, like, I think in time that will probably, you know, people in the future will look back and say, oh, you know, why do we bother, you know, how did people use that and blah, blah, blah. But like you say, I think it's just kind of, as time goes by, it's, you know, you do what you can with what you got at the time, right?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and I think, you know, New Zealand farmers, I mean, I'm just saying, they are very efficient at producing food for the land we've got. You know, New Zealand's quite a fortunate country. We've got a good climate.
Very fortunate.
And, I mean, everyone harps on it, but we produce enough food for 40 million people around the world, and we can do it economically and ship it to other places in the world and probably get it there and sell it for a cheaper price, or, you know, the cost of production is cheaper than they have over there. So, however, looking back, I think, you know, when I started in the Maori Affairs, that was end of 1982, 83. So New Zealand had gone through a chapter in its history where we had Muldoon and I think big projects, and farmers were getting incentivised to cut down bush and put more sheep on and put more cattle on and everything else. And I mean, you know, I look back on that era in 1983 and 84 where, you know, we were on Maori Affairs places, you know, chopping down bush, burning land, getting into grass. You look back now, should it have happened? Probably not. But at the time, farmers were following what the politicians at the time were actually asking for. You know, they wanted more export revenue. So you can vilify them now for what they've done, but they weren't doing it just off their own back. You know, there were incentives there, and so you followed what the government wanted. Mm-hmm. And that's why it happened. And so we went through that whole thing in the 70s and 80s. You know, there were a lot of people going to university, Massey and Lincoln especially, to do whether it was diplomas in agriculture and horticulture or a degree. At that point, there weren't polytechs around for people just to leave school and do a polytech course. So there were a lot of opportunities in the agriculture and horticultural industry, and farming was a good job. You know, you could either go and work on a farm, or you could become an advisor or a banker or a valuer or everything else. And then we went through the 80s, that slowed down all that SMPs and everything else, and land development encouragement loans were around. We get through the 90s, and then I was just reading the other day that reminded me, you know, early 2000s, we had Helen Clark's Labor government where they wanted us to become a knowledge economy. So, you know, at that point, for those that were around then, there was talk that, you know, farming was dead. Well, not dead, but farming was going to have to take a...
I remember that, a twilight industry. Yeah. Yeah. I remember the talk was at the time, yes.
Yep, and we were going to become this technological thing in a knowledge economy, which was fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with all that, but you've still got to understand, if you've got a company, a business doing 80% of the exports, it's still very important. So in that, from kind of early 2000s on, in schools, this is just my opinion, in schools you noticed a drop off in people encouraging students to maybe look at the food and fibre industry to go and do after they left school. And everyone all of a sudden wanted to be an IT engineer or build games or do software. And so that's what's changed, I suppose, over the years.
Yeah. And I know you've been, you did a talk at St. Kinnegan's College the other day about careers and an agribusiness, agriculture and horticulture and agribusiness, I guess. But you did want to play a little song halfway through the interview, didn't you, Craig?
Yeah, I did, Craig.
So I'm going to play this one.
Okay, well,
it's not
we'll
what I usually do, but here we go. Here's Courtney Barnett and Kurt Vile with Continental Breakfast, one of Craig's favourites.
One, two, three, four. You won't believe what I could have told you, but I don't believe I've the balls to let you know. I can say that 'cause I'm a man, but I feel like a little boy today.
I cherish my intercontinental friendships. We talk it over continental breakfast in a hotel in
somewhere on the sphere around here. I cherish my intercontinental friendships. Not much very big on enemies, so I kick a can way up into the sun, man, but it falls down into a ravine. I don't mean to even think about it that way, but I do.
Watching the waves come in at night from my back porch to porch swing, swinging on its own. See, it's just an inhabitant of some holy ghost.
Like a bruised ego along shorefront property unknown to me,
but I'm feeling inferior on the interior. Don't you see? Guarded and sentimental,
and after all it's just a rental.
Like better luck performing telekinesis on a priestess.
You won't believe what I might have could have told you, but I wouldn't want to leave you tripping out over it. Okay, more so me, but
or just me. Watching the waves come in at night from my back porch to porch swing, swinging on its own. See, it's just an inhabitant. Some holy ghost. We talk it over continental breakfast in a hotel in East Bumble, wherever.
somewhere on the sphere around here.
That was Courtney Barnett and Kurt Vile with Continental Breakfast. And we're back again with our guest, Craig Rowlandson, for today's show.
So I was just, we were just talking, Craig, about, I went to the old college that I went to, and we did. I was just talking at a careers evening up there, and it really hit home that a lot of schools, not all schools, you know, the food and fibre industry in New Zealand is way down the list of options for people leaving school to go and do, and there's such a wide range of things that can do. You know, you could just go and work on a farm, or you can go to a polytech and do some courses and go and work for someone who a farm services business, or go to university and do a diploma or a degree. And so the options are endless at the moment. And like everyone else, you know, the rural sector in New Zealand is crying out for staff, casual staff or full-time staff. And whether you want immigration or whatever your views on immigration are, there was an interesting number in the paper the other day that pre-COVID, about 12 months pre-COVID, there were 330,000 people in New Zealand on a temporary work visa. And right at the moment, there's only about 105,000.
Right.
So you know, you've got, for everyone, you know, whether it's cafe down the main street of Raglan here or whatever.
Well, the pub can't find a pizza chef, I know that much.
Yes. Well, there we go, if you're a pizza chef out there.
Yes, the Harbour View Hotel is looking for a pizza chef. Yes.
Yeah. But, I mean, farmers are facing challenges everywhere, and we need help from, you know, people to come and advise and help them, and just more forms to fill out and everything else, which is no big deal. You know, businesses all around the world have to do compliance and everything. But it just, I suppose, from a farmer's point of view, you know, Nicola and I just think a lot of people don't fully understand the stresses and strains that farmers are under to try and do stuff. And then you've got, you know, there's been a big change in New Zealand for every business, probably since social media came along, and everyone's got an opinion on what everyone else should be doing. So
indeed,
it makes it very interesting.
Yes, yes. And I know you're involved in a few different businesses than that, Craig, but I mean, like, the reparation for your work, you know, the pay you make, is that significantly lower in the rural industry or not really?
No, not really. No, I mean, when I, you know, you talk to people that say are in banking, they get the same whether they're working in a rural thing or normal thing in town. And I think, you know, farm staff, whether they're just a general farm hand or farm manager or everything else, you know, the pay rates, like everywhere, have gone up. So, you know, you're a 2IC and you might be on 70,000 to 80,000 a year, plus you're getting a house. You get taxed on the value of that house, but, you know, if you like being outside and you want to do that kind of work, then the pay rates are pretty good.
Yep. Mm.
So you're not disadvantaged, I wouldn't have thought.
No.
But everyone, you know, like you were saying right at the start, Craig, we've become urbanised and more people live in town and they don't think about the opportunities out there.
Yeah, that's right, Craig. And, yeah, I mean, it's like you were saying, I think, Craig, it's kind of unsexy now for some reason, farming, whereas actually, to my mind, you know, farming and agriculture and horticulture is kind of the solution to a lot of the problems that people are facing at the moment, in my mind. But, yeah, I just don't. And the disconnect that I was talking about earlier, I think that's a factor as well. But I think there's, you know, there's tremendous opportunities. I guess, Craig, talk about those opportunities. Like you were saying, there's like your farm workers, farm managers, and da-da-da. But it goes more than that. I know one business you're involved with is like a logistics, like an IT kind of thing. So it goes right from, you know, milking cows right up to sitting in front of a computer all day, doesn't it, the agriculture business?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, all walks of life can have it. If you just want to find out about it, go and find out from someone who's doing it and see if there's an opportunity there, actually. You know, the other thing is what you're saying about being vilified and everything, Craig. It's interesting in New Zealand, we've been a, you know, big exporter of food and everything around the world, and it's interesting when you travel around the world that, you know, you go to Australia and farmers are loved over there. You hardly see anything there. In the UK and Europe, they're, you know, respected and everything else. But there seems to be a change of mindset in New Zealand probably in the last 10 years, I think. And again, does it come down to, you know, information going around? It's like you and I have talked about several times. The latest buzzword is regen agriculture, regenerative farming.
Sure is, yeah.
And yeah, it's around, but you know, you try and pin someone down on what they think regenerative farming is, and there's so many different options. So to give you an example, you know, there's a, in America on some of those, they call them ranches, out in the Midwest and everything else, their terminology for a regenerative farm is one that they've doubled the number of paddocks on their farm. So instead of having 10 paddocks, they've got 20, and so they call that regenerative farming.
Yeah, it's certainly ambiguous, the whole regenerative, and I've spoken to this on air on the show a number of times. Yeah, it's certainly ambiguous, the regenerative farming thing. And unfortunately, I think, you know, there are a lot of regenerative farmers out there actually doing good things, but unfortunately it's going to get watered down quite a lot, I feel, through the process, because it's getting politicised now, and yeah, I don't know, it's a tricky one, and yeah, it's quite a knotty one, but you know, there's conventional farming, I think, is going to move in that way anyway, I think, as time goes by.
But most,
I mean,
of
what are your thoughts?
New Zealand's already there, Craig. Been doing it for the last 40 or 50 years. You know, because if you just look at the word regenerative, that implies that what farmers in New Zealand have been doing for the last 50 or 100 years has been degenerative. But you know, even on our place, you know, most sheep and beef farms in New Zealand, you dig down, the topsoil's been growing over the years, there's earthworms there, we don't crop, we don't turn over the soil, we don't release carbon. So how much more regenerative do you want to be? And the other thing, it was interesting, I was talking to a guy who's in the service industry in the UK, and he made an interesting point that farmers in the UK, they were getting vilified a few years ago, but there's been a change of mindset, especially around this, you know, greenhouse gas emissions and everything else, because politicians and the general public have begun to realise that farmers are one of the few industries in the world that can actually have got the land and area to actually offset their own emissions. So, like, you know, calculations in New Zealand are somewhere around if farmers planted 10 or 15% of their land in natives or exotic trees, then they can be carbon neutral. Whereas, you know, is that has to be better than people in New Zealand that fly around the world and just tick the box at the bottom of the Air New Zealand thing saying, oh, you plant a tree for me. Because, you know, we can do stuff to offset what we're doing.
Yeah.
So
I'm just trying to think now, Craig, on your Nicholas property there. I mean, like, you fenced off all your streams and creeks and things, man, years ago. When did you start doing that? And would that be 10... or more percent of your property?
It's about 10%, I suppose. So we started that when we came to Raglan. We'd been here probably about 10 years. We'd known about Whangaroa Harbour Care with Fred and Fiona there. And then we just got going one year that the cat brought home a fish and just thought, oh, we better get start fencing. This was a long time before anyone else. You know, it was the buzz thing to do. So yeah, we've probably done about 30 odd k's of fencing and God knows how many native trees and everything else. So just try to do everything, and I think most farmers are trying to do stuff. You know, it's like everything, there's going to be 10% that won't do it. They're bad farmers. Like, yep. There are bad people in town, there's bad people everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
But eventually I suppose those ones die and move on.
I think it's very much a generational thing too. I mean, like, when I think back, like, you'd probably remember, like, I remember my grandfather, like, clearing, you know, the scrub, as he called it, all the manuka and that off the things, and now suddenly, and the old man's doing the same thing, draining the wetlands and what have you, but now he's turning around and planting trees again, you know. It's just like you said earlier, it's kind of like, yeah, you do whatever you do that is, you know, I want to say promoted, but it's not kind of the right word, but, you know, prompted at the time, right? So as time goes by, I think, you know, and the new generation's coming through, they're going to probably look to do what you've kind of already done anyway, you know, which is plant up your streams and, you know, look after your land. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, on this greenhouse gas emissions, it's just unfortunate that, you know, you go to the lookup tables for your carbon sinks and native bush is probably only, it's only about 25%, 20% of the carbon sink of a pine forest. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so, you know, if you look at it right now, the government hasn't decided what they're going to do, but does the population of New Zealand want to see pine trees planted everywhere just to be a carbon sink to make the country try and remove our greenhouse gas emissions? And shouldn't we be thinking about 30 or 40 years' time if those are permanent forests and once they're in trees, that's it? You can't get it back.
And you're exactly right there. I mean, every week I'm reading headlines about, you know, the pine tree football and the ETS things getting kicked back and forth this way and that way. And also, you know, small towns that were rural towns with lots of people in them, suddenly it's all pines and suddenly, you know, there's no workers on pine plantations, right? They're just going to stay there. And then, of course, there's the pests and the fire and, you know, the weed risk, all that with the permanent plantations of pine because... Like you say, nowadays, if it goes into pines, it's generally going to stay that as a carbon sink. And with the new carbon stuff coming through, it'll be interesting to see where it lands. I think just last week I was reading out something about how the government's decided to exclude pines from the ETS emissions trading scheme. But, you know, that's changed a lot over the last few months when I've been reading it out and that. I mean, what are your thoughts about all that, Greg?
Well, I think last week they actually changed it back and they're now sitting on the fence whether you can do permanent plantation forestry to get carbon. You know, and by permanent plantation, that's, you know, you plant pine trees and there's no intention ever to harvest them. So do the public of New Zealand, is that what they want? Do they want that or... Maybe if we'd, you know, you look at what the government's done at the moment with the quantitative easing and $53 or $54 billion put out there in the country, would, if you sat down and just had a conversation with the public in town and said, look, what would you rather have? Would you rather have a permanent pine plantation? Or would you rather the government subsidises the difference between the carbon sink on pine compared to native? And so farmers and corporates can go and get land and plant permanent native planting.
Which is exactly what Fiona Evans was talking about a week or two ago when I had her on the show. And there is that allowance now, but I think you need 5 hectares, I think, on your farm. It doesn't need to be one block, but yeah.
But the trouble is the carbon that natives sequester is a lot, lot less than pines.
Because they take longer to grow, of course. Yeah.
So, you know... We don't have this debate. It just seems someone in Wellington, politicians, have a think about this and then they flip-flop and away we go. So I'm not sure what the answer is to that one, really.
Well, you talk to a lot of farmers, Craig. I mean, what's the vibe you get off them?
Most of the ones I know, you know, they accept there's change. They have to change their way of farming. They've got to look after waterways and biodiversity much more. Most, you know, just about all of them accept that's what they're going to do. Although, you know, on the flip side of that, you go down the King Country, a lot of those sheep and beef farms, I think it's from 1st of July 2025, you know, you've got to exclude deer and cattle out of your waterways. So, not sheep. So
not sheep, okay.
No, because sheep don't really make much difference in there.
Right.
But, you know, the water quality in most of those places is pretty good.
Yes.
And even, you know, you look at the West Coast Zone of Waikato Regional Council. So the West Coast Zone is everything that's got a watershed that drains straight into the West Coast, into the ocean.
Right.
Yeah, and I mean, we don't have problems. It's just silt runoff, you know, so that's what really needs to be controlled around this zone, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, planting obviously helps with that, but of course you're always probably going to get some sort of silt runoff. I mean, but yes, there's ways to mitigate that for sure. I mean, I think Whangaroa Harbour is an excellent example of that. The good work Fred and Fiona have done over the years, it's obviously changed. I guess you remember back in the days, which I don't because I wasn't here, but you know, how much the harbour's changed and all that, Craig?
Yep. Mm. Yeah, oh, it's certainly changed, and everywhere you look's changing, really.
Mm.
So I'm not sure, but, you know, farming's going to carry on. We still need farming in New Zealand for our export earnings. Whether we like it or not, that's what we need. So that's why we need more people in there, more people doing stuff. More, there's plenty of opportunities out there, but it's the challenge is trying to get people to do stuff.
So getting back to the talk you did at school, at a school you and I both used to go to.
That's a bit creepy, Craig. Same day and same school.
Yeah, it is kind of creepy. But you know, what was kind of the reaction from the students there, say?
They don't have any courses or, you know, periods a week where they do agriculture or horticulture, which is a challenge.
Is horticulture finished there now?
Yeah, so a lot of the schools, you know, St Paul's has got their ag course going and they've actually now spreading the word for their ag course around New Zealand. I think the government's just given them some money to go and try to get it into other schools. And, you know, the students you talk to, the problem seemed to be that a lot of these schools have written in their pages about future prospects, about what you can do to do ag or horticultural anything. They're saying, you know, you've got to be good at, have really good marks in statistics, biology and chemistry. And so a lot of these...
Yeah, all important, but, you know, not super important.
As long as you can pass. I mean, yeah. You know, and so a lot of them read that and they just think, ugh, I'm no good at chemistry or I'm no good at stats. And so they just go off and look at something else to do.
Yeah.
And because teachers aren't talking about all of this stuff, they just don't think about it. So it's like, you know, I think back to when we were there and long, long time ago, you know, schools don't really have periods during the week anymore, it would appear, where you just sit around and chew the fat and just talk about stuff, which I think is pretty unfortunate, actually.
It's an important part of life, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. Mm. So maybe if I keep on to them, they might change that, but...
Well,
yeah.
You do that, Craig. I actually just looked at the clock, man. It's like 20 to 2, so we better wrap up, I guess, Craig, for now. So I guess...
Thank you for having me in the studio, Craig. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, no worries, Craig.
It's funny we started a bit late, but...
Yeah, we did start a little late. That's my fault, of course, entirely.
That's fine.
But
I just encourage, you know, parents and children and people at school, and even if you're out there now... Look at the opportunities that are available out there, because there are plenty of them, and it is a long-term career prospect.
Do you necessarily need to go to university? Or
no,
like tech
not.
Like, you know, tech maybe even, or just
Polytech,
just
I mean, there's that outfit in the North Island called Land-Based Training. Land-Based Training runs plenty of ag and hawk courses. You can go and do that.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a practical mind and don't mind working outside and everything else, because plenty of jobs, half in the office, half outside, just fossick around on the internet and find something to do. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Craig. I mean, say we've got some young students listening to the show, which is unlikely, but you never know. And then they're thinking to themselves, well, hey, man, I wouldn't mind a job in the ag or horse sector or whatever. Can they give Craig a ring?
They can get hold of you, and you can put me onto them, Craig.
All right.
That's a good idea.
Right.
Why not?
So there we are, folks. Yeah, if you're thinking about these ways, get a hold of me.
Here on the radio station.
Here on the radio station or over the fence, radio show at gmail.com. And, yes, I'll put you in touch with Craig, and we can sort things out that way. But, thanks very much for coming in, Craig. We have much more to talk about, so I'll have to get you back in again at some stage.
Right.
When you can.
We can chew the fat.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
All right. So there we are, folks. That was Craig Rawlinson, and it's like 1:45, and I've got to hurry up and edit this to send it off 3FM before 2 o'clock when Harry's show starts. He's not in live today, folks, but he's there's a pre-recorded one happening, and I think Caleb's coming in later, and then I think this evening Graham's going to come in as well to do his one. So, yes, plenty of good entertainment coming up for you right here on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM. And for now, we're going to go out with a Verlaine song, another Needham band called Hanging by Strands. Hope you enjoy it. Hope you enjoy the show. Thanks again for Craig coming in. And, yeah, see you again next week probably.
With you beating tip for time, you want me to waltz, but it don't feel right. So why do I continue? Well, who said love was an armchair ride? Tip me forward, let me slide. But there's no malice in you, though it sometimes gets too hard. I couldn't believe